I'm Ian. Welcome to Creator Coco. This podcast helps you become a better creator by helping you learn from what other creators have already figured out. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us a tweet at Creator Coco. That's creator and then C-O-C-O-A. In this episode, we talk about the current state of the economy and discuss how inflation works, as well as the coming recession and what you can do about it. I hope you learn something that helps you become a better creator. This episode was brought to you by the Bit Bitcoin Wallet. Bit is a simple and secure Bitcoin wallet that allows you to easily send and receive Bitcoin from your friends, loved ones, and to businesses who support Bitcoin. You can download Bit by going to bitsocial.org. That's bitsocial.org. Okay, so I guess we can get started. For today, the topic I wanted to discuss was the idea of a market crash, or the idea of the state. They're basically discussing the state of our economy right now. Maybe you've heard that we are going through things like inflation, or we're going through things like a recession. And the idea was to kind of explain what these ideas mean and how either you can protect yourself or how you can take advantage of the situation, or how bad is it, how good is it, what does it mean? And I wanted to start with the idea of discussing a market crash. What do we mean when we say that the market is crashing? And when we say that a market is crashing, we mean that the prices of assets have gone down. So, for example, if you own any stocks or bonds or even crypto, the prices of those assets have gone down, which means that if you had, for example, 100,000 shillings that you wanted to invest, you didn't want to leave it in your savings account. You wanted to put it somewhere where it can make even more money for you. And you decided to buy either Bitcoin, Ethereum, or maybe you decided to buy Netflix or Facebook stock. Recently, the prices of those stocks have fallen down, meaning that your 100,000 shillings is now 60,000 shillings or 50,000 shillings or even worse, meaning that you've lost money. So people are losing money. And that's what we mean when you say it's a market crash. On the flip side, because things are cheaper, it means that if you are liquid enough, it's possible for you to afford more assets now. And that's something else we'll talk about. What is happening that has led now to, in this particular moment in time, for all these prices to go up and also for inflation to go up? And also, what's the difference between, like, what's a recession and how is it related to inflation? And the interesting thing is that a lot of us who have gotten into finance, at least the people who I'm talking to, and a lot of young people recently, have gotten into finance in the last couple of years during this pandemic time, because stocks and crypto and all of those things have recently blown up into all our cultural senses. And also, it's much easier to access crypto, to access these tokenized stocks if you want to. So we've gotten into the market in a time when it's a bull market, meaning that people have been optimistic and the market has been going up. But what I'm learning is that that's not something that is likely to be happening going forward. We got in a time when things were good, and now things are about to turn for the worse. And so what I'm learning is that in the past 20 years, there has been a massive wealth boosting effect for the top half of the population, meaning that the people who own assets and the quote unquote rich people have been getting richer, and the bottom people who don't own any assets, who are living paycheck to paycheck, who are employed, they have experienced their wealth diminishing, partly because of inflation, because the cost of the goods and services that they need on the day to day has gone up. And this has created a massive wealth gap. So if you hear about the wealth gap, it just basically means that the rich people are in a position to make more money, and the poor people are not in a position to make as much money. And actually, the life for them is becoming more and more expensive. So the question would be, why is that happening? And that now comes back to the interest rates and the inflation. So the relationship here that we want to discuss is the when interest rates go up, the asset prices go down. And this all leads back to the US because the US is kind of the leading economy in the world, and a lot of countries are affected when the US when the US market turns. For example, a lot of startups and a lot of companies, even here in Kenya, depend on investment from US companies. So if the US market changes, it's going to be even harder for startups and businesses in Kenya and other parts of Africa to get investment as well. And also the some of them also target people in the US, and this is also a global phenomena as well at the same time. So in the US, the Federal Reserve sets interest rates, and interest rates is basically like you can think about it like the price of money. So if you wanted to acquire money, how easy or how difficult would that be for you to do? And when the interest rates are low, it means that it is easy for people to acquire money. So the people who have assets are able to take out loans. For example, if you own houses, if you own stocks, you're able to take out loans and use those assets as collateral. And if the interest rates are low, you're able to take even out even more money, and then you're able to use this money to try and make even more money. And that's what's been happening for the last 20 years. The interest rates have been lower and lower and lower. And so the people who have assets have been able to borrow more and more money, which means that they're basically able to acquire even more and more assets. And at the same time, the people who don't have any assets have been watching inflation happen. And inflation basically means the prices of the goods and services that they use every day. For example, people usually make jokes that bread a while back was like 5 bob or something like that. But the things you need on a daily basis, the prices can go up because there is now too much money. So if there's too much money, and when the pandemic happened, a lot of goods and services were locked up, and the production basically was shut down. So there's less goods and services, but at the same time, we have more money in the economy. Which means that we have more money in the economy because interest rates are high, are low, which means that there's an imbalance. So the Federal Reserve has figured this out, and the reason why we started experiencing, for example, even the crypto crash, is because they started increasing the interest rates, and this means they are engaging in a process of destroying wealth, but a very small amount. So basically, the rich people are going to make a tiny bit less money, but the hope was that it would help the people who are at the bottom to be able to afford goods and services because it would have reduced inflation. But I'm not sure that that has happened. So what's happening in a general sense is the rich people who are they have leverage, and then the poor people are experiencing even more cost for their goods and services. So, Chris, have I said anything there that you want to add more onto, or you think is interesting we can discuss?
In Kuwait, there was an economic crisis in the US caused by the real estate collapse because guys were essentially just overpricing the real estate and buying bad debt. So the economy was basically held by a lot of bad debt. And at some point, all of this came to collapse. And caused some major recession back then. So, what happens is whenever there is a recession, the government has to figure out how to now stimulate growth and make, because when there is the recession, there are fewer jobs and, people are laid off and all that. So, the government has to figure out how to now make the situation better. So one thing that the US government decided to do is something called quantitative easing, where they now printed a lot of money. And the idea was you are printing a lot of money and offering it at low interest so that people take the money and then create jobs. And therefore now, you make more people get employed. And then they purchase more, and then the economy course. So what happens is, well, that on paper, that is what is supposed to happen. Most of the money that was given, you know, it didn't end up to the normal people. What happens is most of these funds go to the large corporations. And what they do is, instead of investing in industries that create employment and all that, they also go and invest in their own stocks. So what at the end of the day, all this money goes back in the stock market. And because these guys are buying their own stocks, it increases the demand for the stocks, and therefore the stock market gets overvalued and the prices just skyrocket. So, and I think you've already captured what happens when everything gets overvalued. And I think now when COVID came, here we are. So I think the point I just wanted to also add was on why the stock market was overvalued compared to other industry, other market sectors. So yeah, I think that's the point I wanted to add.
Yeah. So we've mentioned a couple of things there. So one is the idea of printing money. Printing money is always bad. I remember, like even a few months ago, even a year ago, when the US started printing money, and they probably printed more money in the last couple of years than I think either a third or like a huge percentage of the money supply in the US right now was printed in the last few years, which is scary. And at the time, people were wondering, why hasn't inflation happened? So people are like, is the US economy special? Like, we're still waiting for the inflation to show up. And the other idea is the stock buybacks. So sometimes, whenever you give these corporations money, and politicians will do this, they'll be like, oh, we're going to reduce taxes for corporations so that they can hire more people or they can, stimulate the economy. But you're right that usually what they do is that they're more focused on making even more money. They use that money to make more money by buying back their own stock. And in some cases, they even remove, after they buy the stock, they kind of deactivate it or they remove it from the market so that there's less stock. And that means there's more demand. And that means they make more money because the prices go higher. And we've spoken a lot about inflation, and you're right that there are other factors and other factors that might lead to prices going up. The prices of your bread, the prices of the things you buy every day going up, is apart from inflation because of all the stuff we've talked about, printing money and all of that stuff. There's also things like regulation. So some tariffs are going up whenever you're importing or exporting things or transferring things across different countries. It's possible that your country can charge the other country a higher tariff because of the situation we are currently in. And that means that the goods that you're getting in, or even the raw materials, the prices can go up, and that can trickle down on to you because the person who's making the goods and services will just end up pushing that cost down to the customer. There's also things like exchange rates, which are changing. So if you even look at the situation with the PS5 pricing, which I think was a really bad look for them, but they increased the price of their console after 2 years across all the other countries apart from the US so that they don't get as much backlash. But one of the reasons that they stated was the exchange rates. And if the price of the currency in your country changes compared to the price of a different country, and the two of you are trading, then it's possible that the imbalance of the value might change, and then the cost of your goods might go up. There's also other smaller things, okay, not smaller, but they also affect the situation, which is things like debt. So depending on the amount of debt your country has, and maybe they're trying to repay their debt, so they have to charge more taxes to the companies or things like that. Or if companies want to pay employees more, that can also result in higher prices. And finally, there's something else called shrinkflation. So sometimes if you go to your shopping market or you're opening your app to buy groceries, one thing that companies might do in a situation like this, which you should look out for, is that they might increase the price of the of the good that you're buying. So let's say you're buying a packet of a bucket of milk. I don't know, a carton of milk, 1 liter. They might increase the price of 1 liter, let's say from 500 shillings to 600 shillings. And at the same time, some companies are reducing the quantity of the goods that they're giving you. So instead of 1 liter, maybe you're getting 750 ml, but for the same price. And some companies are doing that, reducing the amount of stuff they're giving you and increasing the price at the same time beyond what it was. So those are some of the reasons the prices are going up. Chris, I don't know whether there's something there that you think I have missed or you want to talk a bit more about.
Well, I think the first thing I'd like to say is when you mentioned people reducing the size, there was a meme which someone was showing a loaf of bread, and inside there it's just a huge hole. So, yeah, but anyway, I wanted to add some more thoughts on the exchange rates and debt. So, most countries borrow. Basically, the whole economic system is based on borrowing. So most countries, including the US, have external debt. So what happens during inflation and economic crisis is when now when the US government is starting to increase the lending rates to the banks, what it means is these banks and other investors will prefer to invest in the US government bonds instead of investing anywhere else, like the stock market, for example, which at the moment is more risky. So at the moment, the best places to invest are, for example, the government bonds. So what is happening now is with people pulling out their monies, which, for example, external investors to the NSE pulling their funds so that they go back and invest in the dollar. What they're trying to do is just to prevent them from losing their value because the Kenyan shilling is watering down way fast. So what this does is because now the US government bond is attracting better returns, these guys are going to pull their funds and they're going to invest in the US bonds. And somehow this also goes to affect the exchange rates because the demand for the local currency is becoming lower. People are running towards buying the US dollars and investing in the US dollar because somehow they anticipate that it's more stable, and if you invest in the US bonds, you're going to get more returns. So I think that's a spiral effect that makes other currencies get weaker and weaker. I think we've seen that, for example, the euro, I think after 20 years or so, is now trading almost at par with the US dollar.
Wow, and that's not a relationship I had learned about, so that's quite interesting. And the other thing is that crypto was supposed to save us from some of these issues. Like when crypto came out, it was supposed to be the hedge against inflation. It was supposed to be fixed supply. The prices would not go down, and all of that stuff. And tragically now, crypto is like very correlated with stock, so it's just as down as everything else.
Yeah, that is true. So I think generally, whenever there is inflation and guys are scared of losing money, what they'll do is sell the most risky assets. And I think most people who venture into crypto, so I haven't done research on this, but I feel like most people are just speculating that the value will rise. Therefore, when they first sight of danger, then dump crypto very fast and to save their money. So risky assets like crypto and will be the first to be dumped. And now guys will be moving away from those assets like crypto and stocks to bonds. And then when the economy recovers and there is, you know, the sentiments, the market sentiment is very positive and all that and bullish, that's when now people move their money from bonds back to stocks and the risky assets like crypto.
Yeah, and you're right about the speculation. If something is fueled by speculation primarily, then that means it's much more risky than something that is fueled by actual utility that is useful, which is why, and we'll talk about this in a bit, during a time like this, it's much more important for you to focus on things that are useful as opposed to things that you're speculating on. And now the question becomes, how does all of this affect you as an individual? And the first thing would be that it is possible for all of us, rich and poor, to lose money together. For example, as Chris mentioned in the 2008 crash, the rich and the poor all lost money together. Like all wealth groups experienced declines in their wealth following that recession. And so it's possible for the entire economy and and everyone together to lose money. Which means that as a society, we are kind of moving backwards because of situations like this. So it can affect all of us at the same time, which is a scary idea. But when you hear of a situation where even the people who have assets and who have wealth are not protected, well, that becomes weird. But now let's talk about the exact definition of a recession. Recession definition, let me Google this. So a recession is a period of temporary economic decline during which trade and industrial activity are reduced, generally identified by a fall in GDP in two successive quarters. So I haven't looked at the latest results, but the first quarter, like the last quarter that the US reported, at least the last quarter of, I think, of this year, was a decline. So I don't know whether the second one has been reported yet. So it's very okay. I've actually even looked at the graph, and we are actually technically currently in a recession. So that's something to note. So the two successive quarters of negative GDP growth, I think have by this time have been experienced. And that means that the economy is not growing. Like the economy is not growing, and there's a decline. So what does this mean? And should we, and like, is it important to grow all the time? Like, why is capitalism obsessed with growth all the time? And so from my research, what I've learned is the way the capitalism is set up and the way the economy is set up, GDPs have to be growing as a sign that the society is progressing. It's not just a capitalist wish. It's a sign that things are getting better in life. And the cycle of of how this process works, it's a cycle, so it can start and end anywhere. But I'm gonna start at the process of creating credit or being able to take loans. So if you're able to, for example, go to a bank and take loans, or I don't know, get an investor easily, then you can take that wealth, that money that you've gotten, and you can use it to invest. So you can use it to create a business. You can use it to open a new shop or a new kind of a business that you're interested in. And then because you've opened or because people are opening new businesses, because it's easier to access cash, then they're able to produce more goods and services. You're able to produce more bread. You're able to produce more vehicles. You're able to produce more goods for or services if you're a barber, if you're in a salon or something like that. And because you're able to produce more of these, the customers or the consumers also become more optimistic about the economy, and they're able to consume more. So you're going to get customers who are going to come to your business, and they're going to buy from you. So they'll give you money. And at the same time, because now you have more customers, it means that you're able to hire another human being to come into your business, and you're able to compensate them. So compensation will also go up. So it's a cycle of credit. You take credit, you use it to invest. That investment produces goods and services, which the customers are going to consume, and then you end up paying, or people end up being compensated more, whether that's you or whether that's someone else who you've hired. And this is a what's the word? Positive cycle of positive reinforcement, meaning that when one goes up, it'll continue with the rest of the other items. But when you think about what's happening now, so if the credit becomes hard to get, it means that less people are going to start businesses. And I feel like a lot of businesses were started in during the pandemic time, but at the same time, there's also a lot of businesses which are closing, which means that you're not able to access as many goods and services as you could have. So people are going to consume less. So you're going to not want to spend because you are not interested in those goods right now. You would rather much rather save because you're not sure about the economy. So you'd rather keep your money in your savings account. And that means that the people who you are planning to hire, or even you yourself, who you are working on your own business, it means you end up making less money. And this is also will also positively reinforce the rest, which means that it's a cycle that that reinforces the other items. So less investment, less production, less consumption, it can actually start spiraling out of control and reinforcing itself to becoming even more negative. And that's what we mean by a recession, and that's why a recession is a bad thing. It doesn't mean it's going to last forever, but sometimes it can last a couple of years, it can last a few months, and it can affect a lot of people's lives and a lot of people's jobs, a lot of people's businesses, a lot of people's livelihoods. If you can't feed your family, if you can't pay your rent, it's going to be a huge deal. Chris, do you have any more thoughts to add on top of that?
Just one more scenario. When the because now the cost of goods is high, and maybe the salary or the expenditure is fixed. So you used to buy something for $100, and now it's costing $150. So what happens is because the cost is now higher, but the people's budgets or income is fixed. What happens is they'll tend to spend less, and how that affects the businesses is they'll get less revenue because people are buying less. So I think that's one other scenario to consider. And then you mentioned recession, and I think I just wanted to remind you that the Feds back in July were like, recession is not really there, because even if you had two consecutive quarters of decline, there are other factors, areas of the economy that are performing well. And I think one that they mentioned was the labor market, where they're looking at how many people have jobs, and they could actually tell that the employment rate has increased. So I think just a technicality, this is my opinion, that they didn't want to cause more panic by admitting that we're already in a recession, but I feel like it's just a technicality on the definition.
Yes, and you've brought up something very interesting, which is now the actual definition of a recession and what the US government is saying a recession is. And from what I've been seeing, people are bashing the government for kind of trying to change the definition of what a recession is after the fact, in order to hide that inflation has been happening, in order to hide that there's currently a recession going on. And this might be tied to the idea that if people aren't panicking and trying to buy up assets, then the prices of the assets are going to remain low. So the people who have this information beforehand and the people who know what really is going on are able to plan much ahead, and they're able to buy a lot of things before the prices actually start going up and before the recession actually kicks into full gear. So I feel like they're changing the goalpost. That's what I've had a few people saying. What do you think about that? You're muted.
Sorry, yeah, I think I agree with that. They're just trying to hide the fact, the hiding or the technicality doesn't, because we've already had 2 quarters, and that has been the official definition for long. So I think they're just trying to hide it, and who knows what might be happening behind the scenes. So Yeah, some people would actually be benefiting from this since they know it has already started, and it has always been inevitable, especially since COVID.
And we've been talking about a lot of pessimistic stuff. I know that some of this stuff is depressing, but now let's switch gears and be more optimistic. Now we've talked about the facts. Now what has happened? When a recession or a recession has begun and the inflation has started going up, meaning that the prices of the things you need every day will go up, fuel has gone up, and the prices of assets have also dropped, so it's harder for you to save or invest in things like stocks. Now the question is, how can you prepare yourself? How can you get ready for what's coming? Or basically, how can you get through this? And the first thing is to spend much less. So analyze your bills, look at the things that you spend money on every month, and remove anything that you don't need. A lot of times, if you're used to having a salary or used to having a certain payment or living in a specific way, it's difficult to imagine yourself living or existing in a maybe without a few things. Maybe you spend money on eating out, or maybe you have a Netflix subscription, or maybe you pay for Spotify and Apple Music. But basically, look at your bills and decide what do you need and what do you not need. And chop out anything that you feel is unnecessary. This is a process that will help you even like to just enjoy life more, enjoy life without necessarily having to spend that much money. And it's always a good idea to spend less and less money. I'll figure out where am I spending more money than I need to, and things like that. So you spend less, and then you try and save more of your money. If it's a salary or if you're making money from your business or anything like that. So you just try and be more lean. And you can save your money in a high interest savings account. I feel like that's one of the, I don't know where you're going to get one of those. I feel like in the US, they have more options. Here in Kenya, you can look for some, but be careful. But the idea is your savings account is pretty much is pretty much where you want your money to sit. For now, at least. The other thing is, if you are going to invest in stocks at the same time, let's say you have extra money that you feel like, oh, I can invest in stocks. You make sure you build up your foundation first. You have your emergency funds, you have your savings, and you've planned for the future. You know how much you're spending, your burn rate, and you can basically weather the storm before you now start going back into stocks and things like that. So that you don't panic when stocks start dipping and that you start selling at a loss. You don't want to do that, which is why you need a strong foundation. Because the people who had a strong foundation when the market crash happened, they were cool. They probably haven't sold any of their Bitcoin. They probably haven't touched any of their stocks. They're just probably investing more and more. And that means in the future, in the long run, they're going to make way more money than the people who sold their Bitcoin, the people who sold their stocks during the crash. Because those people definitely sold at a loss. That's one way to bet. That's what that, those are ways to prepare yourself. I'll talk about how to benefit now, but I want to ask Chris, is there any other thing you feel like is important to think about if you're preparing for something like this?
Yeah, I think one thing is to also be cash rich. So whenever there is, if you have everything in stocks and crypto, it will be easy for you to be tempted to liquidate when things goes out. So I think that will also be one item to consider. And you mentioned something about the high interest savings account. I think one angle to look at it is if currently the inflation rate is around 8.5%, what that means is your money, you're losing 8.5% of the purchasing power of that money each year. So if you're going to invest, so in Kenya, you can't find a savings account which will give you more than 8.5. So that means actually if you save in any savings account in Kenya, at the end of the day you're going to lose purchasing power of your money. So I think one other options you could give there are, for example, bonds and treasury bills, which most of them are currently trading at above 10%. Then another option would also be to look for the same, but in accounts which are denominated by more stable currencies. Now, for example, the dollar investments. So if you could at the same time, get interest and have it in USD, for example, you actually like a better position than someone who is getting the same interest but in Kenyan shillings, local currency. Then I think it will also help, assuming the worst and we get to a Sri Lanka scenario and the currency becomes worthless, you still actually maintain somehow your purchasing power.
Yes. So with the bonds, the other th interesting thing I've seen is that something else that's weird is happening, which is that stocks and bonds are not supposed to be correlated because like that because they're supposed to be the bonds are supposed to be hedges basically, which is why in some situations, even when someone is advising you to invest. They're going to advise that you, for example, invest maybe 60% in stocks or 40% in bonds, something like that. But something interesting is happening this time, which is that the prices of stocks and bonds seem like they're moving together at the same time with crypto and all of that stuff. So there's actually that angle, which I also saw in some graphs that I was looking at. I don't know whether you saw that, you've come across that information.
Yeah, I actually have, and I think it came up on the when most banks are releasing their financial results, where there is like paper loss for the money. But what it means is the bonds which were issued by governments before this year are now valued way less, so they've lost the value. So if you go and purchase them, they're actually very cheap. Because those bonds were issued with low interest. So, an example is now if you already had bonds, if you already purchased bonds at $1, you can now, if you want to sell, you might sell it at 80 cents. So, this means if you decide to sell the bonds, you'll incur loss. But if you don't sell, that's what they now call the paper loss, if you don't sell, you actually don't incur the loss. So people who already had bonds cannot sell their old bonds which had lower interest to buy new bonds. So new bonds actually have a higher rate, but people who had previously bought bonds and want to sell them will have to sell them at a cheaper price and incur losses. So I think for generally, new bonds that are being issued have higher rates, but when now you go to the older bonds, since they are becoming less attractive, they are losing their value.
Oh, that's very interesting. My next question would be, how do you, okay, do you buy bonds for you for personally, do you buy bonds and how do you, what's the process for buying bonds if you, that's something you're interested in?
Yeah, so actually I thought it was one of my worst financial mistake, but apparently it wasn't, since at the moment seems to be the best performing. But I think just that in the way you said, when people say that when you're young you're supposed to focus more on stocks, and then as you get older you focus more on bonds. Because yes, with stocks they are risky, but there is a chance of creating more value. While bonds are more conservative, they are less risky, so you need to have more of them life when you get older. So I usually consider that a mistake, in investing in one. But when things actually went bad, I realized they're actually now the best performing. So anyway, so there are usually two ways. You can either do directly or through a broker. So the easiest way is through a broker. You just have to create an account with them. Mostly the KYC are the national ID, KRA PIN, and proof of residence. So some of the companies which do this are like, I think there is one called Gaia, and called Gaia and something. I think I remember the name. But the one I use is called Genghis Capital. There are others like Interactive Brokers and Visa who also offer the same. But the idea is the same. You just open an account, you give the KYC information, and then they create a CDS account for you. So most of them will give an app or an online trading link where you can go and make the purchase. Usually, the best kind of bonds are the infrastructure bonds, which do not incur, what is it called, the 5% tax. So, those are the ones which people are advised to purchase. And usually, the minimum is I think 50,000 or 100,000. So if you're going to purchase, it should be in multiples of that. Yeah, and
Okay,
then
so that's, yeah, okay.
the other is opening an account with the central bank. So you'll have to go pick forms there and then fill them and return them to the central bank. So that is preferred for people who care a lot about the margins because the brokers will charge you a fee, usually 1% or 2%. So if you don't want to lose that, you can prefer to just go directly to CBK.
Okay, so that's Genghis Capital. I will also check them out and see what they have to offer then. Okay, cool. Okay, so the other aspect of this is the other thing people are saying is that this might be a generational kind of wealth opportunity for people who are able to position themselves in the correct places. And I wanted to also talk about how it is possible for you to benefit. I think it's possible for you to benefit from something like this, whether you are starting from zero or whether you already have a ton of money. Even when the 2008 recession happened, a lot of new companies were born during that time. Think about Airbnb and other companies like that. Well, it's possible for you to start from somewhere where you don't have much, but you see an opportunity and you're able to position yourself in the correct way for you to be able to benefit. Some of the best ways for you to benefit are for you to start online businesses that have low overhead. These are businesses that can work anywhere. They have high margins. They're based on software, which is very scalable. And they're also agile, meaning that you can change these businesses whenever you need to because of the market forces or things like that. So having an online business, and this obviously depends on the idea that you have, but one of the ways which you can benefit from this is by thinking about online businesses. And there's a lot of people right now who are not, who are, apart from online businesses, they are focusing on buying a lot of cheap businesses because there's a lot of businesses right now, if a business is struggling, it's more likely that the owner is going to be willing to sell. And there's people who have wealth already, and they're going up and buying a ton of businesses right now and owning a lot of equity in a lot of these businesses. Even stocks are cheap. So right now, if you can afford to, if you can afford to buy Netflix, if okay, I don't know whether Netflix will go up, but it depends on the whether you have conviction in the stock. Right now, there's a lot of cheap businesses for you to be able to purchase. There's a lot of if you believe in the stock, if you've done your whole all your research and all of that stuff, it's possible for you to acquire businesses at a low cost right now. And you also need to focus on practical businesses at the same time. If you look at what's happening in a market downturn and you put yourself in the minds of the consumers, what are people going to need? If they're going to need less Netflix and they're going to need more, I don't know, bread or more financial information, or they're going to need to get tutorials so that they can get better jobs, or they can, or even schools probably might benefit from something like this because people want to re-educate themselves or something so that they can get better jobs later. And so it's possible to take some of those opportunities, start your own businesses in a lean way that you feel you can scale up. And if you're able to find customers during this time, that might give you a boost. What else? So it's also important for you to find sources of information which are good online. So as much as we are talking all of this stuff, we got our sources from, you know, where the people we trust or the information, the sources we usually find online. But it's important for you to find people you trust, and you shouldn't listen to everyone who is trying to give you advice online, because a lot of them are also in the same situation as you, and they just want to make money, and they're going to try and take advantage of you and your desperation and your, you know, maybe ignorance in some cases. You don't understand how something works, but you want to make money. So only focus on people who you trust and be very careful about where you're going to be putting your money during this time, because you're going to find a lot of people who are desperate and a lot of people who also need money. And so you're going to be very careful. But it is possible for you to look at this as a good time to position yourself in a way that can result in you creating generational wealth for you, or creating businesses that can scale, or creating wealth for you, basically, for you to be able to take off and have a good life in the future. I know there's one pessimistic side, but there's also an optimistic side to this whole thing. Chris, what do you think?
You're absolutely right. It's also a time for people to create wealth. And it reminded me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine who was like, they thought they wasted the last year because they were doing another project and never got time to invest in any stocks. And I was like, you haven't lost anything. Whatever I invested, I've already lost like a third of the value or two thirds. So this is actually the best time for you to invest. Like, think of it as you're getting the same thing but at a way cheaper cost. So I think this actually is, in case you can afford it, this is actually the best time to invest.
Yeah, like when crypto was reaching like 50K, 60K, like at that time in my head, I was like, wow, well, what if I could buy crypto when it was at 20K? I would have been so rich. And so this is that time, right?
That is true.
But then at the same time, the weird thing with economics is now at when it's 20K right now, it's still hard for us to for you to feel like, oh, let me buy. I know I should be buying. I know I should probably be spending all my money on this crypto, but it's still a hard decision to make. So it's a weird thing that's going on.
Actually this book called The Psychology of Money. I think most people need to read the book because most times people are swayed by the market sentiments, and when it's bullish, that's when people try to invest then. But actually, if you do the opposite, if you invest when things are bad, and you're actually going to make more money. So you just need to make sure that you resist the temptation to go with the herd mentality and the current market sentiments. You need to know why you're investing. It's for the future, not for now. If you are doing day trading, it's different, but you're actually investing for 10, 20 years, or even 5 years. So you need not worry so much about today. You need to know that in 5 years it's going to get way high. So this is actually the best time to enter the market.
And one of the best ways to actually implement a system like that is called, what's it called? What do you call that thing where you, okay, fine. Where basically commit to putting in a certain amount of money to your into your crypto or into investments every month, without looking at what's happening in the markets. If you have a stock and you believe it's okay, then just commit to a system where you are contributing. It's like a small savings account, and you're contributing to that account every at intervals, so that over time, whether the market has gone up and down, you keep It's called dollar cost averaging. Yeah, so just dollar cost average your savings, so that you don't necessarily need to focus on the market. So you don't worry if things go up, if there's a recession, if there's no recession, if you're in a position to keep investing. And that's actually something I'm trying to build up to. I'm not 100% committed to that process because of my financial situation, but it's something I'm building up towards, and I think that's the best way to invest going forward.
Yeah, I think definitely when it comes to investment, there is no quick rich formula quick. And I think one of the easiest way, as you mentioned, is the dollar cost averaging. Just don't put in so much emotions into it. Just try set aside some budget and do it, and don't think so much about what is happening currently. Yeah, you keep your eyes focused on the goal. You don't get you don't lose focus based on what is currently happening.